When you start to realize how it's done and what they're doing, you start to see that life in a very different way. This is a way that they put the cross and the circle, this symbol again, into Christian churches. Now, among the people who've been initiated into this knowledge over the centuries have been some of the most famous artists and writers. Mentioned that this morning. This is the famous picture by Leonardo da Vinci. Now, according to Holy Blood, Holy Grail, a very well circulated book in recent years, the elite secret society based in France, which is very much part of this bloodline orchestration and network, called the Priory of Sion, Sion, S-I-O-N. And when you look at the ancient Sanskrit word for the sun, which that white race took into the Indus Valley, which manifested as that culture, you find that Siona, S-I-O-N-A, just one letter difference, was the ancient Sanskrit word for the sun. For me, Priory of Sion is Priory of the Sun, and it's massively connected, this secret society, to the Merovingian bloodline. And Leonardo da Vinci was a Grand Master, according to Holy Blood, Holy Grail, of the Priory of Sion. He was in the knowledge. And what he's done here, if you look at it, he has symbolized that very same recurring Illuminati symbol of the circle, the cross, and the sun on it in this picture. He's depicted Jesus as the sun. When you look into the ancient world, you find that the way they symbolized their sun gods was to put a halo around them, indicating they weren't literal people, they were symbolizing the sun. I'll give you an example of that in a second. And he's broken up the 12 disciples into four sets of three. That's why that guy's looking the other way. And it's an interesting question. Did God create a law, like eons ago, that religious deities could only have 12 disciples or followers? Do you know? They're every bloody where. They've all got 12. I mean, is it in the contract or what? And you get King Arthur, the center, the sun, and the knights of the round table. The 12 knights of the round table. At the top of the SS, you had Heinrich Himmler, who was, he had this knights organization, and he was at the center of it, Himmler, and he had 12 knights around his round table. This constant recurrence of this same symbolism and this same knowledge and techniques. So that's what that was all about. And also, Leonardo da Vinci was another man, like Christopher Columbus and Nostradamus, who was employed by the de' Medici family, and indeed funded and sponsored by the de' Medici family, a major Illuminati family from Venice, Italy. A lot of the so-called deities that supposed to have existed were symbolized with these classic sun symbol headgear and what have you around them. This is a Phoenician stone in Britain, which symbolizes their sun god, Bel, which also manifested as Baal. They called it Bel, B-E-L. And there's the halo they put around the head to indicate that it was symbolizing the sun, not a literal person. So out of this knowledge came, as I said earlier, prison religions that were created to imprison the mind. Instead of saying, well, I'll look at this religion, I'll look at that religion, I'll look at that religion, and what I think is right from all of them I'll take, and what I'm not sure about, you can keep that. That don't feel right to me. I'll come to my truth, thank you. Instead of that, you get an off-the-peg religion, and you have to contract to all elements of it, no matter how nonsensical you may be, because if you don't, you're not a Christian. You're not a Jewish. You're not a Jew. You are not a Hindu. You are not a Muslim, because you don't contract to all these things. Don't think for your bloody self. You take what we say off the peg is the truth. So let's have a look where some of these things came from. That sums up religion for me. There's these two old kind of, you know, Stone Age people, and they've got these two pile of stones here, like, and he's saying to his mate, Doesn't Throng look silly? He must know that our pile of rocks is the real God. You know? And that's the way that we've gone. We have been focused away from the fact that we are multidimensional infinity. Not only part of the great I, we are the great I, into thinking that we have to look up to some deity that's been created, and there's always a middleman in between us and the deity. Have you noticed that? What I call the religious Mr. 15%. I mean, is it really not possible to talk to the divine without going through a bloke in a long frock? I mean, is it possible or what? I don't know. Maybe it's me. And here's something else I find interesting, because I'm a strange man. You look at the origin of all the major prison religions, and where do they come from? The same area of the world. Judaism, Christianity, Islam come from there, of course, but so does Hinduism, which was taken into the Indus Valley, the stories that later became the Vedas, the religious books, etc., by a, according to conventional history, a white race from the Caucasus Mountains that went in there. And as I said earlier, one of the focuses in the ancient world, the focus probably, of these particular bloodlines I'm talking about, was Babylon. And out of Babylon, funnily enough, just a coincidence, has come the blueprint for control by religion. In Babylon, they had, this is a Freemasonic symbol, but it symbolizes a lot of the Babylonian stuff. This manifested this image of the eagle looking both ways here as the Roman god Janus, of the face looking both ways. And one of the major mind control projects on the planet is the Janus project based at NATO headquarters in Brussels, Belgium. But in ancient Babylon, they had three deities in their trinity. That comes up again and again. One was Nimrod, the father, and then there was Tammuz or Ninus, the son, and they said that the father and son were one, and only through them could you get to heaven. And the female aspect of the Trinity was Queen Semiramis, who they symbolized as a dove. They symbolized Nimrod as a fish. And what they said about Tammuz Ninus, the son, was that he died to save humanity. It's thousands of years before Christianity. And when they killed him, they put him in a tomb. They rolled a rock across the front. And 3 days later, when they rolled it back, Tammuz had scarpered. I think I've heard that somewhere before. And what you get is this recurring theme and these recurring stories, which, as the passage of time goes, just get put in a different context, a different time frame, with different names. And we're supposed to take them all bloody literally. I mean, like, you know, we take this guy literally. You see, when the Illuminati moved from their center in Babylon to Rome, not only did you get the Roman Empire, you got the Roman Church, which became the Christian Church. So we went from the place Babylon, where the blueprint of control by religion and the stories of so many of them came out of, they moved home to Rome, and suddenly we get another religion that's based on the same stories. The coincidences are amazing. Oh, he's got a big hat, look, you know. I love his hat. Actually, someone pointed out some of the symbolism of that. When you look at that hat sideways, it's like a fish head, you know. And the fish head keeps coming up in terms of Nimrod, who symbolizes a fish. Now, this is a wonderful example. You look at the deities who died to us, sins could be forgiven, died at Easter, and born on December 20th as the Virgin Mother. There's endless numbers of them. This is a classic, one called Mithra. Mithra was basically replaced by Christianity. And the reason that so many people moved from Mithra worship across to Christian worship was because it was so bloody seamless, or just the names changed. Everything else was the same. They symbolize Mithra as a lion, the sun. They said that he held the keys to heaven. And there's the serpent, the snake going around him. They said of Mithra, he was born to a virgin mother. He died to save the sins of humanity. They brought gold, frankincense, and myrrh to his birth. And on it goes. It's just a mirror. When you go back even further to ancient Egypt. On the left, you've got Horus, the sun of God of ancient Egypt, that is constantly symbolized, as I've shown, by the Illuminati, who go back to the Egypt big time with the bloodlines. And on the right is Jesus. Some interesting little correlations here. Where are we? Jesus was the light of the world. Horus was the light of the world. Jesus said he was the way, the truth, and the life. Horus said he was the truth, the life. Jesus was born in Bethlehem, the house of bread. Horus was born in Anu, the place of bread. Jesus was the good shepherd. Horus was the good shepherd. Seven fishers bought a boat with Jesus. Seven people bought a boat with Horus. Jesus was the lamb. Horus was the lamb. Jesus is identified with a cross. Horus is identified with a cross. Jesus was baptized at 30. Horus was baptized at 30. Jesus was the child of a virgin Mary. Horus was the child of a virgin Isis. The birth of Jesus was marked by a star. The birth of Horus was marked by a star. Jesus was the child teacher in the temple. Horus was the child teacher in the temple. Jesus had 12 disciples. Horus had 12 followers. Jesus was the morning star. Horus was the morning star. Jesus was the Christ. Horus was the Christ. Jesus was tempted on a mountain by Satan. Horus was tempted on a mountain by Set. Did they have plagiarism laws in those days? I don't know. We seem to be following ourselves rather obviously here. And what these things kept doing was creating prison religions, not only prison religions that were fiercely enforced to keep people from expanding their minds to see the true nature and magnificence of who we all are, whatever our genetic background. This, you would think, is Mary holding Jesus. It's classic. This is how the ancient Egyptians depicted Isis holding the baby Horus. The cross is supposed to be a Christian symbol. No. It goes back as far as you can follow history, the cross. So, I'm not going to go into this now. There's too much to do. But like I said earlier, there's a tremendous amount of evidence that a Roman aristocratic family, very much part of the bloodline, called the Piso family, wrote the original gospel stories, which have, of course, been rewritten and messed around with ever since. Now, the person who took those gospel stories and turned them into the religion we know today is a guy called Constantine the Great, the Roman emperor, who called together 318 bishops, it is said, at his palace at Nicaea, which is now Iznik in northwest Turkey, to make them decide what Christians should believe, because they were arguing among themselves like crazy, and so they should. Who's to tell anyone what to believe? But he wanted a creed which everyone would agree on, and then it would be fiercely enforced. They had a punch-up, apparently. They were kicking and cussing, and eventually he imposed what's called the Nicene Creed, which is still the basis of what Christians are supposed to believe to this day. This cross is part of the mythology that the night before the Battle of Mithraean Bridge, when he was fighting to become emperor, that he saw this cross kind of manifest in front of him, and Jesus said, "By this cross you will conquer, but in this sign you will conquer," to be absolutely accurate. Now that sounds like the bloody Prince of Peace, doesn't it? I mean, it really does. And Constantine the Great wasn't a Christian. He was a sun worshipper. He was one of the bloodlines. He worshipped a deity called Sol Invictus, the unconquered sun. And to him, he was creating just another sun-based religion for the masses to take literally, to keep them in line. And that's where Christianity came from, although the vicar didn't tell me that. And here's the Christian bloodline, getting back to bloodlines. It's amazing how this bloodline keeps turning up. The Piso family, the Roman aristocratic family who I feel strongly actually wrote the original gospel stories, they were the same family, and admitted to this, of Herod the Great, who they put into their stories in an historical context. They were the same bloodline as Constantine the Great, who created Christianity as we know it through the Nicene Creed. Many of the Pisos, and this is provable fact, were the early popes in the Roman Church. King Ferdinand of Spain and Queen Isabella of Castile, supporters of Christopher Columbus's journey to discover America, they were the people behind the Spanish Inquisition that burned and killed anyone who didn't agree with every element of the religion that their early ancestors on the bloodline had created and sought to impose. And King James I, a Satanist, who gave his name to the most used English version of the Bible to this day, is the same bloodline. Just a coincidence, nothing to worry about. This is what's going on behind the theme. Joseph Smith, high degree Freemason, the founder of the Mormon Church, Merovingian bloodline. Go into my website, you'll see some ancestors of this guy who are trying to expose the Satanism that goes on in the Mormon Church, because it's just an Illuminati front, although the vast majority of its people have no idea. Brigham Young, who took over as leader from Joseph Smith. Merovingian bloodline, who created the Jehovah's Witnesses. Charles Taze Russell, Merovingian bloodline. They're there to divide and rule us, to create prisons of the mind that we will take and allow to disconnect us from multidimensional infinity. And of course, when they die, you see some evidence of their background. This is Charles Taze Russell's grave. He was ritually sacrificed on Halloween, and they put him in this thing, you know. I hope he'll be very happy, you know. Incidentally, at the risk of being accused of being racist here, but who gives a shit? Provably, both the Mormons and the Jehovah's Witnesses, who were massively connected at the top, were funded into existence by the Rothschild Bank in New York, because the Rothschilds couldn't give a shit about Jewish people. They have mercilessly manipulated them for centuries, and in this century most grotesquely. And if we are going to allow ourselves to get pulled into the idea that because they are claimed to be of a certain genetic background, that they're not going to treat their own people like shit, then we're going to lose the plot. And it seems some people in Vancouver this week have done. Now, working not only have you got a situation in which the bloodlines are working among themselves, they have created a secret society network, a pyramidal system, through which they manipulate using people who are going to work, doing their job, going home, and have no idea what they're making a contribution to. The secret society network has been fundamental to hiding the existence of the bloodlines and introducing the agenda. And when you, I'll give you just an example here. When you start to look at these different secret societies like the Freemasons are supposed to have started in like the 1700s. No, that's when they got the name Freemasonry. These secret societies today go back right into the ancient world where the bloodlines came from. Babylon, ancient Egypt, etc. I'll give you an example. Around the time of the Crusades, in Jerusalem, three knights organizations suddenly appeared almost together, which still exist today and have among their number some of the top people in modern politics, business, banking, military, etc. One was called the Teutonic Knights, which relate to Germany, and it was through the Teutonic Knights network in this century that the Nazis were created and manifested in the horror of the first half of this century. Also about that time, a group of knights called the Knights Hospitaller of St. John of Jerusalem also appeared. Today, in their Catholic expression, they're called the Knights of Malta, and their official head is the Pope. And in their Protestant expression, they're called the Knights of St. John of Jerusalem, and their official head is the Queen of England. The other one was the Knights Templar. Again, around the same time. Now, the Knights Templar's official history says that they were created to protect pilgrims who were visiting the Holy Land. Well, there were nine of these buggers for about 9 years. You're going to protect a lot of pilgrims. I mean, it's just a cover story. By the way, the Knights Templar symbol was the red cross on the white background, which is the ancient Phoenician symbol. And what these nine knights did is they parked their bums in Jerusalem, right next to Temple Mount. And suddenly, after about 9 years, things seemed to began to motor very fast. A couple of them came back and had discussions with this guy, Bernard. You know, this guy, Saint Bernard, you know, the name the Saint Bernard dog after and all that stuff. And what happened was that suddenly they started signing up many, many, many people, hundreds and hundreds of people, into the Knights Templar. And they were signing up the noble, royal, aristocratic families of France and then further afield. To join the Templars, you had to give them your wealth and land. So they became very wealthy very quickly. They set up two centers for their finances. One was in Paris, the other one was in London. These are still the terrible twins of Illuminati operational manipulation in the world today. By 1307, the King of France, Philip the Fair, who appears to have been anything but, he's up to his neck in debt to the Templars. The crown heads of Europe are up to their neck in debt to the Templars, just as their successors today have the governments of the world up to their neck in debt, because debt equals control. And what were they doing, the Templars? They were lending people money that doesn't exist and charging interest on it. Now, this is a scam that these bloodlines have played throughout history. They just do it on a global scale today. Now, Philip the Fair was really kind of fed up with this, and there are other reasons too, and he issued secret orders to purge the Templars on Friday the 13th in 1307 in France. That's why Friday the 13th has been considered unlucky ever since. I'm not saying all the Templars were malevolent and manipulators. I'm talking about the force that was controlling the Templars. So, the secret orders weren't quite secret enough. And the Templars, most of them, got away, because they had a massive fleet of ships by this time that were doing all their trade, because they were a commercial operation. And when Philip the Fair went into the headquarters in Paris to get the loot, it was empty because they'd gone. Now, a lot of research has been done in recent years about where they went. These Templars were in the knowledge. They were part of this underground knowledge stream of this Illuminati network. The people controlling were, anyway. And they definitely went two places, and they almost certainly went a third. They almost certainly was across here, because they knew, because of the Phoenicians who went there long, long before, that America existed. Now, one way they went was from their port in La Rochelle at the time of the purge in 1307 down to Portugal, where they hid behind a Christian front, the Templars under another name, called the Knights of Christ. And they were a maritime organization. Of course they were. They had a bloody big fleet to use. And one of the most famous grandmasters of the Knights of Christ, i.e. these Templars, fleeing Templars in Portugal, was called Prince Henry the Navigator. Now that's very, very significant, because one of the sea captains close to Prince Henry the Navigator was the father-in-law of Christopher Columbus. Christopher Columbus wasn't looking for the India and tripped over America. He knew basically where he was going because he was in this knowledge stream. And what were the flags that Columbus flew on his ships? The red cross on the white background, the Templar flag. Who financed him? Isabella and Ferdinand, the people behind the Spanish Inquisition. He was also financed by the de' Medici family, who keeps coming up. And so what was happening was, this was a time the Illuminati wanted to populate America and the Americas and destroy that ancient knowledge that was there among those native peoples. And they did a magnificent job, but not quite good enough. Now, why did they call this guy Columbus? I like that one. When his name, he used to sign his name Colon. They call him Columbus in the stories. I think they used to call him Colon because he was full of shit. No, they weren't. No, they didn't. No. I'm kidding. Here's the Templars here, the red cross and the white background. There's the white red cross and the white background. And this is the first apparently discovery of America with Columbus coming over here. So let's look at old Chris. Interestingly, and I can't emphasize it enough, I mean, my chin has dropped to the ground over the years when I see the obsession with symbolism and code. I mentioned earlier that the female deity of Babylon was Queen Semiramis, and they symbolized her as a dove. Therefore, the dove has become a major Illuminati symbol going back to Babylon. It's played. See, we think it's to do with peace. So we see a dove and we think, oh yeah, it's a peaceful sign. It doesn't mean that to the Illuminati. And when the Illuminati moved from Babylon to Rome, they worshipped Queen Semiramis under the name Venus Columba, which means Venus the dove. The word for dove in French to this day is Columbe. So Christopher Columbus was a code name for the dove, the bloodlines moving across and parking themselves in a new area of territory, which we call North America. So we have Columbia Pictures, Columbia University, the District of Columbia, British Columbia. It's all this dove Semiramis symbolism. There again, this is a Freemasonic symbol, the dove. There's the pyramid, which will become very significant as we go along here. In the regalia of British royalty, these stick shields, these septics or something, scepters, I don't know what they bloody call them, you have the dove, the dove. And in the Illuminati symbolism, the Queen of England is a manifestation of Queen Semiramis, because it's all ritual. And on Trinity Broadcasting Network, have you ever seen that? I have to turn it off to have a fix once. I turn it on to have a fix once a day. It's so bloody funny. It's a Christian Broadcasting Network, and they have the dove there because the Trinity Broadcasting Network is a front for the Illuminati, just like Pat Robertson's Christian Broadcasting Network is. Go into the website. Now, just as the Templars came down here and then manifested over here with Columbus, so the other place they went after the purge in 1307 was around the west coast of Ireland and into Scotland. There have been some good books written in recent years documenting this. They went into Scotland, and they went there for a number of reasons. First of all, a lot of the bloodlines manifested in Scotland, moved to Scotland. People think that a lot of the classic Scottish names like Sinclair and stuff are actually Scottish. Not true. They came from this area of the world, and originally, of course, back where the whole thing started from. And there was a family in France that was fundamentally involved in the creation, right at the start of the Templars, called the St. Clair family. When it moved to Scotland and Roslyn Castle near Edinburgh, it evolved into the Sinclair family. And the Sinclair family are one of the major Illuminati bloodlines. Not everyone called Sinclair, of course, because the name has got, you know, moved out. I'm talking about that bloodline going through that calls itself Sinclair, the main one. And so when the Templars were fleeing, they went into Scotland because they were going into very friendly areas with the Sinclairs, etc. And also, Robert the Bruce was having problems with the Pope. Scotland was excommunicated, so the Pope had also joined in the Destroy Templars thing through Philip the Fair, didn't have access to them there. Now this is not just historical naval contemplating, because the Templars manifested out of Scotland eventually under another name, the Scottish Rite of Freemasonry. The Scottish Rite of Freemasonry, with its 33 official degrees and many Illuminati degrees above that, is the biggest secret society in the world today. It pervades world politics, world business, world banking, world military, world media ownership. And it is the Templars under another name. It goes right back into the ancient world. Just changed its name to Freemasons, but it's the same seamless story going through history. This is one of the holy grails of the Illuminati, really, over the years. It's called Roslyn Chapel on Sinclair land. And the reason I show this is because in the stonework are sweet corn plants and cactus plants that at the time this was built were only found in the United States, probably still are. That's significant because this chapel was built and that stonework put in place long before Columbus left on his journey. And there's a lovely book, it's a very rare book, written by a Canadian, that shows that Prince Henry Sinclair, not Prince Henry the Navigator, Prince Henry Sinclair of Rosslyn Chapel, of the Sinclair bloodline, landed in North America in 1398, 100 years before Columbus, because they knew it was there, because they have knowledge that we don't. They just want to sell us a fantasy of history. Now, when the Illuminati moved into America and North America, the same will be true of Canada if the research is done. They wanted, as I talked about this morning, to take over America. Okay, and they could do that with the colonies and all that stuff to start with. But that was over control, and it had a finite life. They wanted to seamlessly move it into covert control, which can go on forever until it's identified. And to do that, they put several placemen into the founding fathers of America, people like Benjamin Franklin, in this illusion called the War of Independence, which the American army did not win, the English chose to lose, if you look at it. It was unbelievable what they were doing to allow the Americans to win, because that was the idea. And, you know, in America, and I hold my hand up to them, you know, I don't agree with their version of life, and I don't agree with many of their views, but some of the Christian movements in America are doing some wonderful work at the level of exposing the manipulation, financial and political. But they still go starry-eyed and glassy-eyed and tearful when they talk about the founding fathers. Well, I'd like to talk about the founding fathers, particularly this guy, Benjamin Franklin. Benjamin Franklin was a Satanist. And he was a wonderful believer in freedom. He used to buy and sell black slaves, this guy. Now, in the run-up to the Declaration of Independence and the War of Independence, this guy wasn't in America supporting Americans. He'd parked his bum at 28, a street near Trafalgar Square, 28 Craven Street. And he was operating in the secret society network, particularly a notorious satanic human sacrifice operation called the Hellfire Club, which included the Prince of Wales at that time.